Welcome to the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Thanks for joining me on the D Word Podcast. Now, one of my guilty pleasures is to settle down with a good murder mystery. Well, on this edition, I'm delighted to be able to chat to Michael Booth, who's the only person living with dementia who's written one. It's called Forget Me Not, The Letter in the Headboard. Michael, great to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word. Want to talk about the forthcoming book, but before we do that, I mean, tell us a little bit about your own story and your involvement with dementia. I understand that started with caring for your mum.
That's correct, Peter. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. It's really nice to be on the D Word. Yes, that's exactly how it started. About 20 years ago now, I got the unfortunate acquaintance with dementia. It was my granddad had dementia. He was a lot older though, and that's kind of what I expected. That's what I knew about dementia. But then when my mom was diagnosed at the age of 55, that questioned everything that I knew. and made me sit up and think and take note. And I took time then to learn a lot about various types of dementia that there is, how it progresses, a lot of information, got involved in research and that. And little did I know that about 6-7 months after my mom passed away, I would then be diagnosed with young onset dementia at the age of 46. So I've had it now for about 5 years. It's progressively getting worse. Not so much my memory, although it's getting worse now. It's been other symptoms that it's really troubled me with. So here we are with it. And since then, just done a lot of work around dementia and using the skills that I had from a secular point of view to become a voice, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 46, how difficult was it for you to get a diagnosis? Because I guess, the medical profession, people were looking around thinking, well, Michael's only 46, so we'll go down other routes, as it were.
That did happen. But fortunately, because I had links into the memory health team, the memory services, they were able to identify some of the symptoms, and they were the ones that actually recommended I go get tested. So for me, I was pretty fortunate. I managed to cut out a lot of the pre-stuff. So it only took a year and a half for me to get diagnosed. But that was only because of the networks. Had I gone straight to the GP with my symptoms and said, this is what the problem is, possibly even today, probably would still not have been diagnosed. It's because they do look at everything else first before they diagnose you.
Yeah, I think it's a case of taking age out of it, isn't it, really, which would make that process a lot, a lot easier and more significantly, a lot quicker.
You're right. Yeah. But unfortunately, NICE has their guidelines where they work on a rule out system. So dementia, unfortunately, sits lost on that list. When all else fails, what else can it be? And dementia then becomes something. I mean, there's no reason why you can't do blood tests and everything, but at the same time, go for scans in there. And, if anything else, rule it out. Based on their old rule out system, you could rule it out. Or rule it in, whichever way it goes.
It almost seems sensible to go down that route first, wouldn't it? Anyway, let's talk about the book. Forget Me Not, The Letter in the Headboard is a murder mystery, Michael. I mean,
it is.
Most people that will write about their story and how dementia has affected them, and I know you've already done that in Dementia, Not Alone, the first book, but, why a murder mystery?
I'm currently rewriting certain parts of dementia training. And while I was doing that, I took people's experiences, snippets of them, that fitted the training. And I said, right, I'm going to do that. But then I built a story around it because obviously I want to mask the person's identity and everything else. And I've always enjoyed creative writing. It's something I've always enjoyed doing, but I never really did it. And so I started writing these stories, and people were telling me, these stories really drive it home and that. And then it kind of got the bug. And I thought, well, it just suddenly came to me about, the plot and everything. And I thought, well, I'll give it a go. Let's see. I mean, at the worst case scenario is it gets left on my hard drive somewhere and, nothing ever happens with it. But no, I started writing it, and a few times I almost stopped because with dementia, I suddenly lost the ability to spell it sometimes, and then I couldn't type properly, so I had to dictate various things, and it started to take its toll on doing it. So I can see why it hasn't been done. But I managed to get through it with a lot of patience, and I had some people in my background, my wife and a few others who were reading all the chapters, editing things, and making sure that the storyline followed, because I even forgot. I mean, even today, I don't think I could tell you quite who all of the characters are in the book as it goes on, because I've forgotten who they were and what they are, so I have to keep refreshing myself. So to try and keep the story on track and make sure it followed everything, and my wife would say, but you've got a big gap here. What's happening here? I'm like, oh, I better put something in there. And so the story ended up getting on, and then, yeah, it ended up turning into the physical book, which was quite something. This is the very first copy,
Yeah.
to be printed. I had to print one out to check it and make sure everything was okay with it. And so this is the very first copy, and it will be available on the 24th of April, but you can pre-order it now.
Okay. Definitely go out and have a look at Michael's book. I mean, the character Moira in the book you describe as a female version of you. How difficult was it to write? All the emotions and experiences that you had, and then place them on a different character. That was
Yeah.
a really interesting sort of a thing.
That was really a difficult thing, because what I wanted to do was educate people of what it's like to live with dementia without them actually being, without them realizing they're being educated. And so it was a matter of taking my symptoms that I have. I mean, Moira is a totally different character. She's military based. Well, I was not, that my dad was, so that's how I managed to make the connection between the two. But she's military based, she's a female, which is also different, but what I had to do was take my symptoms. But what I really found difficult was expressing those symptoms in a way that people could relate to them with feeling and empathy, so that they could get the understanding of what it's like. And that was challenging at a time. Sometimes the hardest part of it was actually placing those symptoms on Moira. So yeah, it was emotionally challenging too sometimes to find the words and writing about it and having her go through various episodes where she was struggling to walk, or she couldn't remember various things, or when a taste went. All of those little things, trying to explain it. But of course, when you do creative writing, you've also got to try and expand on it, because the person can't see you. They can't physically understand. You've got to try and get that story across. And it was challenging, to say the least. But I think I've managed to carry it across, because what I'm looking for is sympathy. So I had to strike that really fine balance of how to do it. I even had Moira go through an episode of delirium as well, so that people can try and educate themselves on the difference between the two. So she got a UTI, and the delirium started to kick in, and how the, but then I also managed to write about Trina, which is the carer, a friend of Moira's. And really what I wanted to try and drive home there was the relationship that should exist between a carer, be that a family member or not, and the person living with dementia, and that relationship that is needed, that both need to understand what each other are going through, and how to manage those. So that was quite challenging, trying to get that across. But I was thinking of my wife at that time as I was writing that, of what she would do and how she would try and explain things and what works, what doesn't work. I was open with a few things. Yeah, I'm quite happy I managed to get it out, to be honest with you. I'm quite proud of that. I didn't actually realize this until somebody told me, but it is the first time in the world that a person has written and published a murder mystery novel living with dementia. I couldn't find anybody anywhere who's done it, so quite shocked by that. Although not surprised, I will admit.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
On UK Health Radio, we have new shows arriving every month, and you can find out everything you need on the website at ukhealthradio.com. I'm chatting to Michael Booth about his book, Forget Me Not, Letter and a Headboard. The book itself, and I think it's some of the best forms of education are the books you read, and they make you think, and like, oh, wait a minute. And if you can carry that along with the storyline as well, I think it's a lot more powerful than just the kind of, black and white, this happens, that happens type approach. But I also think it's very difficult to be able to do that as well. So I applaud you in, going down that route, because I think it's really important that we get things out there in terms of dementia that talk about the way people live, the challenges they have, but also talks about the fact they can be of a former military, they can be anybody.
Anybody.
Moira comes from a former military background, she could be anyone.
Yeah. And what's nice about it as well is I also show that Moira still has various cognitive abilities. The skills that we have don't disappear. Moira herself, from a military background, is a military police. So she was able to assist in a little bit in the investigation until it comes across where it could be that she's done the murder and forgotten about it. So it's quite possible. That's the twist along the side of it. Is that possible to actually happen? I had to do a lot of research on that one, and there are cases of that happening, where people have committed murder and have no recollection of it whatsoever because of their dementia diagnosis. I did not know that. So that was quite interesting to learn. So I wrote that. It wrote that into the story with a few twists and tales, and how the family got involved, and how dementia affects everybody all over the show. But it's not just about the dementia. Dementia is the story running through it. Of course, you've got the murder mystery side of things. That's still there. Who did that? And that opens up into a whole web of things. But there's comedy in there. Put some lightheartedness into it, because if we can't laugh about things, then we have a problem. And there's a little bit of romance, all clean. There's nothing untoward in it. So it's hopefully it's a good read. That would be, if I can move a couple of copies, I'll be happy.
I'm sure you move more than that, but it's also set in a part of the world that you know very well, of course.
Yes, I was born in Hartlepool, grew up in South Africa, born in Hartlepool. I thought it would take less complication if I try and write about something that I know well. And I know this area fairly well, so I thought I would stick around here, because that just takes out one complication I didn't need of trying to look at different areas and trying to fit things in. So to try and make it as realistic as possible, I stuck to local areas. So it does Hartlepool, but it also goes into Stockton, Middlesbrough a little bit. So it's the round area, pretty much falling under the Cleveland Police, which is what they govern.
Yeah, I think it's, It's a remarkable thing in terms of what you've done in terms of media, and I think also in giving some prominence to young onset dementia, which was where we started with this conversation. That people look, you're someone at 46, they can't have dementia, whereas you're bringing out in the book someone that has gone through exactly that. But they're, they're serving, they're solving a murder mystery. It's, as you said earlier, it's, Moira hasn't lost a lot of her abilities. And I think sometimes people are very much prejudged when they get a dementia diagnosis. Suddenly you've got a big D over your head instead of actually the person that's behind it all.
What people generally tend to think about, Peter, when they're diagnosed is the late stage. That's what we all think about when we get it. That's what we picture in our heads. When you speak to people about it who have been through it, they remember their loved ones, but that's what they remember is those last few hours, days, months, or years where they were really struggling. And that, but that's only a portion of it. In fact, it's a very small portion of it. We've got to get to that point. And in doing so, that's a whole journey where you almost become a new person, I think, because you are constantly reevaluating, you're constantly changing what you can and can't do, how you do things, you're managing the symptoms, you're living with them. Trust me, it's really tiring. But in amongst all of that, you still can have a fulfilling life. And that's really what we want to drive home, is that we can still contribute.
Yeah, and you're doing exactly that. You talked about humour a couple of minutes ago. I've had, talks with a lot of people about humour because I mentioned dementia and then I mentioned humour, and they think that, dementia can be a dark subject, and so therefore we can't laugh. And I'm actually in your school. You said if we can't laugh about something, we got a problem. And I think it's very important.
Well, give me an experience of what happened in our young onset dementia group. I won't mention any names, but the person was late. He's living with vascular dementia. He was diagnosed pre-65, but only just. And he, for the life of him, he couldn't find his keys. Anyway, after a long story short, he found his keys in the fridge next to the milk. So when he came in and he was all flustered and everything, and he walks into the meeting and where we're having our young onset gathering, and he told us his experience, and I burst out laughing because I thought it was funny. Well, he didn't find it funny, and others, you can't laugh about that. Why can't I? I mean, it's funny. You got to see the funny side of things. You can't just sit there and take everything so seriously. What's life going to be about if we can't laugh about the mistakes that we make? And I mean, God, it's funny. Eventually, they came around to my way of thinking, and they started to laugh and actually thought, yeah, you're actually, you know what? It is right. It is funny. So just, we can't take dementia seriously. Let me rephrase that because I don't want that to be misconstrued. We do need to take it seriously, but and you do have to be careful of where you do these type of things. But you know what? You've got to take the symptoms as they are, and some of them can be just hilarious. I remember some of the things my mom used to do. Man, they used to make me laugh. But she was like me. She had a sense of humor, and she would laugh about them with me. And if you can do that, it makes dementia livable. You don't have to go down the depression route and be miserable all the time. Laugh it off. That's my best medicine.
Yeah, well, I don't. I think it's a very good medicine for any condition. I think frustration I've had is that I spent a career in public health, and part of the reason why the show's called the D word is I never heard the D word mentioned. Everything was
No.
about diabetes, coronary heart disease, etc., which are very
Or
important
cancer.
conditions. Cancer, I've had my own cancer diagnosis, so those are, those are things that I don't know if he accepts the right word, but the public think they're in the mainstream, But for some obscure reason, still, dementia is the kind of ignored kid sitting in the corner. And when it comes to young onset dementia, there's probably a little brother who's sitting even further in the corner. And we need to drag it all together somehow.
Well, that's what myself, the work you're doing. I know Pete also. He's doing a lot of that. There's a few of us now dragging it, kicking and screaming into people's vocabulary, into their life. I mean, yes, I'm up for a challenge. I will accept challenges. I will question the norms. I've never been a person because I come from project management, so it was always a matter of questioning things and looking for better ways. So I use those skills, and I use my voice that I still have, thankfully, that I can try and help people to learn about dementia, which is partially why I'm redoing all of the dementia training, because I just find it's really shocking that people claim to be dementia professionals, and all they've watched is a 4-hour slide presentation thing. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, that's it. This is the most complicated disease there is. Dementia as a whole. I mean, I know it's not a disease, but as a whole, it's the most complicated thing a person can live through. And all we need is 4 hours. And you're a dementia practitioner or a consultant. I'm like, no, I'm sorry, that's just not, it's not good enough. Or a level two for care homes. They can't even spell the word dementia, never mind actually care for somebody. Things have to change. So that's a pet project that I'm busy with in the background.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Always good to hear from you here on the podcast. We're on all the social media apps, and the email is tdwradio@gmail.com. Back to my guest now, Michael Booth. You know, I've been doing this show 7 years, and I'm learning every day, let alone, 4 hours or whatever. And I think that our whole thing about education, I mean, it's probably my pet subject that people probably won't want to listen to again, but I got invited to a Dementia Action Alliance meeting when I
Oh,
first
yes.
started doing this show. And I looked around the room and someone said, anybody got any questions? I said, well, yeah, I've got a question. And they said, well, what is it? I said, isn't there someone missing? And they looked at me and said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, we haven't got anybody who's living with dementia. So how on earth are we supposed to tell what people living with dementia want if we don't ask them?
Exactly. I mean, I'm not quite in the camp where people say nothing. What's it? Nothing for us without us, or something that they say. I'm not quite in that camp, but you're right. They have no idea, other than reading things in a book or listening to other people's experiences. They have no idea what it's really like to live with this disease, no matter which type it is. And each type is different. I can speak to somebody who has exactly the same one I have, subtype I have, and they can deal with it totally differently, because we're all different people. Getting those voices into the room can only enhance the care and the support that we are giving. There is no negatives to it, other than it's going to take some time. And that is one of the things that, and you know what? People who do it are fascinated at the end of it about how much we can actually contribute. I mean, you think about some of the things. I mean, forget about what I do. Think, for example, of what Pete does, and his technology side of things, and he's like a wizard on a computer, that man. And some of the stuff he comes up with, and then you've got others that are like Gail, for example, her artistic take on things, beautiful pictures that she can come up with. We all bring lots of things to the conversations, and those are the things that are really important. And I think that's what people miss when they decide to co-produce, but it's just a tick exercise along the way. And that's just, it's not acceptable. Those days are long gone now. That anybody who says that is just, it's not worth it. I mean, I'm doing a project up here where I've eventually got one of the charities to put their hands in their pockets, and they're building a dementia village up in Hartlepool. And I was right from the very concept of it, right involved in it, getting it all going, and the design stages, the working with the architects and everything, the planning office lot, all the way through. That is true co-production. And I think this is going to be something that is going to be excellence. I mean, we're not sparing money, but we're being frugal about things, but we're not being silly. We're looking at redesigning. How can we, looking at things like entrance into the house? I always forget my keys, always. And then I'm locked out the house. So how do we do it? So we're looking at all sorts of different technologies. We've got tech companies involved. It's amazing how many people would give up the time and their expertise to help us and do so for free. I'll just put that out there. You know, if you question things, people will come on board. And it's just it really humbles me as a person living with dementia how much time people want to give, the real ones that want to make a difference, how much time and expertise, and sometimes their profits that they're prepared to give just to help me. You know, that's how I view it, and I just think it's wonderful. But we did a lot of work around one of the universities that has come up with building designs, etc., that's supposed to be good for people living with dementia. But when we asked about them, nobody living with dementia was involved in the design of them. And when I looked at them, I'm straight away like, yeah, that's not going to work. The color scheme is all wrong. This is wrong. That's wrong. That's right. Right. Scrap that. We'll start from the beginning. That's how we did it. So you can see the difference of co-production.
In the 7 years, I have learned more from talking to people like you, Pete Middleton, and all my friends who are living with dementia than I would ever learn looking in a book, quite simply. And I hope that our listeners are learning more through listening to yourselves, rather than looking at the price, looking at the book or whatever. A friend of mine, Phyllis Fair. Phyllis is in Canada. I had the pleasure of visiting her last summer, and she's involved with the Schlegel Research Institute on Aging. And she was telling me the story of she went into a kitchen that they had designed. And said to them, it's very nice. It's all lovely color coordinated. But you do realize because the furniture and the walls are all the same color, I can't see that chair anymore. And they suddenly went, oh, I hadn't really thought of that. And like you say, that is perfect co-production.
Unless you live with it and know what you're thinking and feeling, you just can't. You can't understand them. People do forget about things like your vision, how that is affected for various types of dementia, how your hearing is affected. For me, anything below the knee is almost very blurry. If it's a dark color, I don't see it. Tripping over, big problem. And so, yeah, you're quite right. That was one of the things we really looked at and looked at different colors. Even the heights of the plugs, the plug sockets and the wall, the lights, which is the door contrast between the door post, the door and the wall. All of those things people just don't think about, that they are so vitally important to make somebody so that they can stay at home longer. And of course, there's some great tech out there. And tech is improving all the time. I mean, my house now is pretty much kitted out to the hilt because, as you know, I test a lot of stuff. And I've got stuff all over the show, and some of the things that people have come out with, and I'm working with other developers right from the very word go because they've seen the value of putting things in place. And yeah, there's some really smart people out there, I can say that. The things that they think about and how it's going to work, and that you're just like, yeah, if you can get this right and you can develop this product, would change everything. And I'm just grateful to them really, because they're thinking about us when they're doing that, and they don't really have to. They could do a lot more things with their genius, but they do it for us, and I find that quite humbling.
Yeah, and I think it's great that people do that. I mean, the Dementia Village idea is brilliant. We've had the Dementia Village in Langley in British Columbia on. We've had the Ugwaik on, who's in Netherlands, of course. So to actually get one of those in the UK is magic.
It should all work out great. And our hats off to some of the, because there's a conservatory on site as well that's looking a little bit tired, but we didn't put that through any of the planning permission or anything because of costs and whatever. But the architects and that are going ahead with it, and they're doing it all for free now because they've just seen the value of what's happening here. And it is the first in the UK. It is the first in the world to be designed by somebody living with dementia. But it will be the first in the UK to actually to work. And we've got Lidl's right next door, which are coming on board with it, and they're going to get their staff trained up. So it's going to be great.
Yeah, hello. Look forward to it, and we will chat some more about it in the future, hopefully. And what you came to is go back to the book for the thing. One thing I wanted to ask you is, when you wrote the book and came to write the book, are there any kind of literary influences that you had in writing it?
Yeah, I like murder mystery novels, but I like the ones, I forget the guy's name now, who writes about the horse racing.
Dick Francis.
That's just, I like his style of work. And I also quite enjoy Richard Osman's work as well, his new books that he's put out. If I was to class this in anywhere, that would be the influences that I've looked at. So I would put them along, probably not as good, but I would put them in there somewhere. They're my influences.
And you've got to think Richard Osman made it into a film. Don't forget, this could be the next part.
Oh, well, I have no idea how that happened. So you're way ahead of me on that one. It's like I wouldn't even know where to start with that. It is amazing, though. I'll tell you a little bit about trying to get it published. The amount of people who were interested in the book, but as soon as they hear that I was diagnosed, wouldn't take it any further. And so I ended up doing it myself, but I learned a lot along the way, from the first book. And they just would not give you that they come with you with like half contracts or whatever else. But then when they want to pay you with a proper contract, then it's like, yeah, okay, but you've got dementia, so is it really going to work? Is it going to? And then they step away from it. It's amazing. So I've done it myself, and I do a lot of the marketing and everything. So I'm learning along the way, but again, it's people who are giving me their free time that are helping me and guiding me in doing all of this, and I can't thank them enough. They're really superstars. They really
Well,
are.
when the book sells a lot, the publishers might well look back and think we should have actually taken that a bit more seriously. I certainly
Think
hope
so.
it will. Remind us again, when's it out?
24th of April. Is
24th of
the
April.
paperback, and on the 15th of May is the ebook.
Excellent.
So it'll be coming out on Kindle and PDF and whatever else that they do.
Absolutely,
Yeah,
and
and
available.
I'm looking to do an audio book, because I
Oh.
do realize that reading and retaining is difficult for people living with dementia. So I do want to do an audio book, but it is seriously expensive. So I'm trying to see how I can find a way. Somebody will do it for me.
Absolutely. If anybody out there wants to do Michael's book as an audio book, then do get in touch with us or him. It's been a real pleasure, Michael. We'll have to get you back on
Thank you
the
very much, Pete.
show once the book comes out, and also talk more about the Dementia Village as well, which
Yeah,
sounds a
love to.
brilliant project. But for now, anyway, Michael, thank you so much. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for being my guest.
Thank you very much for having me, Pete. Really good, and keep up the good work.
Thanks to Michael, and I wish him every success with Forget Me Not, Letter in the Headboard, which is available at all good booksellers from the 24th of April. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for your company, and I hope you'll check back soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on the D Word Podcast.